This week's Parsha is Parshas Vayishlach, and the title of the shiur tonight is Yaakov's Victorious Wrestling Match. I want to address the whole scenario where Yaakov meets up with this malach, with an angel, with a man, and he wrestles with this man before he meets up with Esav. I really want to understand what the purpose of the story was over there in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Vayishlach. There's a famous question is whether it literally happened or it was a Mar Nevuah. I don't really want to get into that. I just want to understand and address the purpose of it and what it did to Yaakov and why it was necessary for Yaakov to fight with this angel before he encountered Esav. Let's take it up from the Bereishis Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Chaf Gimel. I'm going to read through the Pesukim, explain them, and then we'll try to get into it with the Rishonim. It says, Bereishis Perek Lamed Beis, this is source number one. Oh, I forgot to number the sources. But the first source, Chaf Gimel, Vayakom Balayla Hu, Vayikach Eshtey Nasha, Veshtey Shev Chosa, Vesachad Asar Yiladav, Vayavor Esma Avar Yabok. Yaakov, he takes his two wives and his two maidservants and his 11 children, and he passes over the ford of Yabok. He takes them, and he takes everything that he has, and he brings them over the river. Brings everything that he has over the river. Yaakov levado, ish imo adalos hashachar. Yaakov was left alone, and he ends up wrestling with a man until dawn. Alos hashachar. Vayar ki lo yacholo vayga bechaf yerecho vateka kaf yarech Yaakov behavako imo. He saw that he wouldn't prevail, the malach, and he ends up dislocating the hip of Yaakov when he's wrestling with Yaakov. Okay, so Yaakov, he's left alone as he's passing on this over this river. He's trying to get away from Esav, and he's left alone, and he encounters a man, and he fights with this man, and what ends up happening is Yaakov's hip is dislocated. In Chav Zayin, Vayomer Shalachini ki Allah Shachar, Vayomer Lo Ashalechecha ki Berechtani. This man says, "Please let me go because it's dawn." And Yaakov says, "No, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me." Vayomer Lo Mashemecha, Vayomer Yaakov. This individual, Malach, says to Yaakov, "What's your name?" And he says, "Yaakov." Vayomer Lo Yaakov Yamer Od Shemcha ki Yisrael ki Sariso Im Elokim V'im Anashim Vatuchal. The Malach says back to Yaakov, "Your name will no longer be Yaakov, but rather it will be Yisrael. Why? Because you prevailed, Sarisa, you're an officer, Im Elokim, with God and with man, and you prevailed. Vatuchal. Vayishal Yaakov, Vayomer Hagidana Shemecha, Vayomer Lamazet Tishalishmi, Vayavarcho Sosham." Then Yaakov asks this Malach what his name is, and he says, "Why are you asking me my name?" But he gives him the bracha over there. Vayikra Yaakov Shem Hamakom Peniel Ki Raisi Elokim Panim El Panim Batinatzel Nafshi. And Yaakov names the place where he had this battle, this wrestling match with this Malach, Peniel, because he saw Hashem Panim El Panim and he was saved. Very odd story here. What exactly is going on? It's very cryptic. We don't really know who this individual is and what the purpose of the story is in terms of Yaakov. And there's a lot of smaller questions to take up in the story. Does anybody have any questions that they want to address in the story? Okay. I mean, one question, the main question of the shiur is, what's the purpose of this encounter of Yaakov wrestling this man, this malach, whatever he was? Another question that's relevant is, why did his hip dislocate? What's the purpose of that in the story? His hip dislocation. And the change of name. How do we understand the change of name from Yaakov to Yisrael? So let's look at the Rashbam in number two. And he just gives...
I have a separate question not related to those.
Yeah, go ahead.
The last one, Panim El Panim, that he's still describing how his encounter was with Hashem, I guess.
Good, yeah.
And I thought only Moshe is described that way.
That's a good question. I don't know if we're going to be able to take that up.
What does he mean by Panim El Panim?
Okay, maybe we'll try to explain that. I'm not sure, but it's a great question. Why does it say Panim Panim if it wasn't really Panim Panim? It was a malach, it wasn't really direct. So what exactly does Panim Panim mean? Okay, well, maybe, hopefully, yeah.
I have a specific question about the name change.
Yeah.
First, is it really true that the Torah doesn't call him Yaakov anymore? I'm not sure about that.
That we will take up, definitely. That is true. It does call him Yaakov in other places, so good question. It's not really a real name change. It's a good question. Yeah, okay, good. So why was the name change necessary? And also, once you say that he's still going to be called Yaakov in certain situations and not Yisrael, so what's the significance of the name change? Why do you need it? Even more so, it's a stronger question. Okay, good. Good question. You see by Avram, actually, that Avram was always called Avram after his name was changed. But Yaakov, sometimes he's still called Yaakov, and sometimes he's called Yisrael. The Gemara actually mentions that. So we're going to look at that at the end of this year. There's a Gemara on that. Okay, so the beginning of the story is that he was left alone. And there's a famous Rashi. The pshat that he was left alone is that he stayed behind, and he made sure that everything got over the river. And he was trying to escape from Esav, and he was the last one. And he wanted to make sure that everybody would be in front of him in order to escape from Esav. That's the Rashbam. And the Rashbam inside, he says, Vayivasir Yaakov Vado, Klomar Shehevir Kol Asher Lo. He sent everything that he had over the river. Shelo Haya Od La'avor Elohu Levado. He was the only one left. Verotzo La'avor Achareyam. He wanted to go behind them. Ki Levroach Derech Acheretz Shelo Yifkishenu Esav Niskavin. I think he's saying that he wanted to make sure that they were attempting to escape, and he wanted to make sure everybody was in front of him, and he was at the end, in order that everybody escape together and nobody be left behind, lest Esav get one of them. So that's why he was left behind. And I think that's just a pshat, that in traveling and in taking his stuff over the river, he happened to be the last person, and because of that, he was left behind. But there's a Rashi on this, and Rashi, he's quoting the Gemara. Rashi's very strange. He says, look in number 3 on the source sheet. It says Rashi on Pasuk Chaf Hei. It says, Vayivaser Yaakov, Shachach Pachem Ketanem V'chazar Aleihem. Yaakov, he forgot very small containers, small jars, and he went back to go get them. So he's packing up his stuff, he's moving, he's on route, and he left something small, he left some toys or something very small that was insignificant, and he goes back to go get those things, and that's how the story begins. That's how it's initiated, with Yaakov going back to get the little containers that he left behind. Now, if I asked everybody on the phone line, if I asked you, is that a good thing or a bad thing, what would you say? Was it good that Yaakov went back or bad that Yaakov went back for the small things? He went back for something like a toy or some small jar of... Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Somebody answer. Good or bad?
I wouldn't say bad, but I would
not the safest thing. If he's worried about the safety, then forget about those and just move on.
Okay, good. So I also thought that. When I was reading Rashi, I thought, listen, it's really kind of a negative thing in the sense that if he shouldn't care about the small things. He should just move on, move forward. And that's how I was looking at Rashi. But the Gemara says differently. The Gemara in Chulin, which I think Rashi is getting his idea from, it says that it's actually a perfection. It's a good thing in Yaakov. If you look in number 4, it's a Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Aleph Amad Aleph, and it quotes this pasuk, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado, Amar Rabbi Elazar Shneshtayer Al Pachin Ketanim. He left back small containers and he went back to go get them. Mikan Latzadikim Shechaviv Aleihem Mamonam Yoser Migufam. To a tzaddik, his money is more important than his own body. V'chol kach lama, and why this much? L'fisha ein poshtin yedehen begezel, because they don't want to end up falling into stealing something. And by being concerned about your money and making sure that everything you have is there, you'll ensure that you won't be a gazlan. You won't end up needing something, and you won't end up stealing from others. I don't really understand, I'm going to be honest, I don't understand this midah, why it's so good. But what is puzzling to me is that at first I was reading Rashi, and it seemed it was a bad midah, it was a bad quality. But if you look in the Gemara, it seems to be a good quality. And if it's a good quality, the question is, how does this good quality relate to the story of the Malach? There must be a relationship. It's not just random that the Torah would and Rashi would mention this good personality trait of Yaakov, that he goes back for something small because he doesn't want to fall into the trap of Gezel. He doesn't want to end up stealing from somebody else. That's a very nice idea, But what does it have to do with the whole story? It must have something to do with the story, because the Torah is setting it up by telling you that this is the reason why he's going back. So at this point, I would say that it's a good thing that Yaakov went back. But if it's a good thing, how is this, or why is this the reason why the initiation of the story comes from this standpoint? Why is that the case? So that's one question I want to ask just to start the shir with. And I'm going to develop a theme in the shir. But the first question is, if Yaakov, according to Rashi at least, if Yaakov is going back for small things, and that's really a good thing, and it's a reference or reflection of his righteousness, why is it necessary for the story to start with that, with referencing Yaakov's righteousness, especially in this manner? I understand if it was a bad thing. I would understand if it was a bad thing, because, you know, it could be that he needed some type of improvement, but it's a good thing that he's going back. So why is the Torah telling us this? And how does it fit into the story? So that's question number one. How does going back for small jars, small containers, fit into the whole story of wrestling with the Malach? Okay, so what happens? He ends up fighting, wrestling with the Malach. If you look... Whoa. Hello? Hello? Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. There's a phone call on my phone. Okay, sorry. Okay, if you go on to the next Rashi after that, it says, Vayavik ish, they were wrestling. And there's two pshatim as to what it means that they were wrestling. Menachem Pirish Vayis Afar ish, Lashon Avak, Shahayumalim Afar Baragleim Al Yidei Na'anuim. They were shaking a lot in their wrestling match. It was very heated and intense. And the dirt was coming off the ground. And that's what it means, Vayavik. It means that they became dirty. They were muddy in their wrestling match. That's one way of learning it. Vili Nira Shahu Lashon Vayis Kashar. Rashi says that it means that they were intertwined. V'lashon aramihu, basar da'avikube, v'avak le'mebak, lashon aniva. It means like a bow, to be tied together. Shekein derech shnayim shemisatmim lahapil ishes re'eyu, shechovko v'ovko bizra'osov. When you're wrestling with somebody, you get them into a headlock, you're joined, you're intertwined, the two bodies are intertwined. And that's the reference to vayavik. That's why it says vayavik. Okay, so there's two different pshats as to what the word means, vayavik. Either it means that the dust, they got very muddy and dirty, or it means that they were intertwined with one another. And I'll show you why this is a question, or what, you know, what the question is. But for now, that's just the pshat. And look at the last part of Rashi. U'pirshu rabbosinu zal shehu saro shel Esav. This individual, Malach, was the sar of Esav. It was the officer of Esav. Somehow this Malach was a representation of Esav. What does that mean? What does it mean that this Malach was the... Did he look like Esav the Malach? Does everybody have a Malach? Does every individual have a Malach? So what does it mean? What is Rashi talking about? That Yaakov was fighting with the Sar Shel Esav, some type of image of Esav, Malach of Esav. What exactly, who is this Malach of Esav? And why is the Rashi mentioning it in this context, that he's fighting? Just say that he's fighting a regular Malach, Gavriel, whatever. He's fighting Michael. What does it mean that he's fighting the Sarah Shal Esav? Who is that? So that's the second question. The first question is, Pachim Ketanim, if that's really a good thing, why is the Torah starting off this whole wrestle match with that story? And the second question is, who was he really fighting? Was he? It sounds like he was fighting some type of Malach. Although Rashi doesn't say openly, but it sounds like he was fighting a Malach, and this Malach was somehow the Sarah Shal Esav. It was an officer of Esav. So why is that significant? What does it mean that he's fighting an angel of Esav? Okay. So those are the two questions, and we're going to answer them. Okay. Why I said before that Vayisafar ish, according to Menachem, this idea that the dust was brought up by their feet is a significant idea. I saw a Gemara. It's also in Chulin. All the Gemaras on this area are in Chulin. And the Gemara says, based on the Rabbanan, if you look in, I'm not sure what source we're up to, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, V'Rabbanan, Hai Behav Ko Imo, Mai Darshi Bei. What do the Rabbanan do with the Pasuk of Behav Ko Imo? How do they learn that out? Mi Baile Lechidach to Rav Yeshua ben Levi. They use it for the same drasha that Rav Yeshua ben Levi learns out. The Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Milamed Shehelu Avak Margalosam Ad Kisei HaKavod. It teaches you that the dust came up from their feet all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod, to Hashem's glorious throne. Ksiv hacha behav ko imo, ksiv hasam v'anan avak raglav. There's a gzera shava, it says here, Behav Koimo in fighting with him by Yaakov and the angel. In Pasuk Chafav, Vatekakaf Yerach Yaakov Behav Koimo. And it says over there, Nachum Ve'ananavak Raglav, which is also an idea of the literal meaning is the cloud is the dust of feet. And it means that the dust that they were fighting in went all the way up to the Shemayim, all the way up to Kisei HaKavod. And I don't understand what that means literally. What does it mean that the dust went all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod? Of course, we know that the Kisei HaKavod isn't literal, but it's figurative. It represents an idea about Hashem, because Hashem doesn't sit and he doesn't stand. He has no physical body. So what does it mean that the dirt went all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod? So this is question number three. If you hold that, if you believe or maintain that they were fighting and they were getting muddy and dirtied up, what is this? What's the idea, the concept behind this drasha, that the dirt went all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod, to the glorious throne of Hashem? What does that signify? Okay? So that's question number three. So we have three questions at this point. And let me just review the questions, and then we're going to start the answer. So the first question is, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado. Why do we have to know that he went back for the Pachim Ketanim? And then the next question is the idea of the Saro Shel Esav. How does that fit into the whole story? What does it mean that he was fighting the angel of, or the Sar of Esav? And the last question, in fighting, the Gemara says, there's a drasha that the Rabbanon maintain, that in fighting, the dust and the dirt went all the way up to the Kisei HaKavod. Now, what is the significance of the Kisei HaKavod in this story of the wrestling match between Yaakov and the angel? Okay, so those are the questions. I came across a Rashi in last week's Parsha that I want to reference, and I was doing it with the fellows that I learned with on Shabbos. And I think it's actually very appropriate, and it fits into this piece about Yaakov and the wrestling match with the angel over here. Over there in Bereishis Perek Chav Ches, if we go back and we recall, Yaakov had this whole Mar Nevuah about this Sulam with the ladder, and there were Malachim going up and Malachim going down to protect him. And in the middle, in Bereishis Chav Ches, it says, V'hinei Hashem nitzav olav v'yomar ani Hashem, Elokei Avraham Avicha veElokei Yitzchak ha'aretz asher ata shochev aleha lecha etznena uzaracha. It says, the pasuk says that Hashem was standing on the ladder, and he said to Yaakov, "I'm Hashem, the God of your forefathers, and the land that you're lying on will be the land that will be given to you and your offspring." Now, what does it mean that Hashem was standing on the ladder? Rashi on the same pasuk says, "Nitzav alav l'shamro," that Hashem was guarding him. Now there's I didn't bring it down, but there's a Sifsei Chachamim that explains where Rashi gets this idea of Lishamro from, that Hashem was guarding Yaakov. And the Sifsei Chachamim quotes a Gemara. The Gemara is also in Chulin Daf, big shocker. It's in Chulin Daf Tzadi Alf Amabez, the same area. And the Gemara references why Hashem needed to protect Yaakov from, and who was he protecting him from. The Gemara is the next source after that, the last source on the page. It says, Tana, Olin u'mistaklin b'diyokno shel mala. One set of malachim would go up, and they looked at the image above, the Yordin u'mistaklin b'diyokno shel mata, and then they would look at the image below. Ba'u l'sikune, it led to danger and a threat. Miyad v'inei Hashem nitzavolav. Immediately, Hashem guards him, he protects him. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Ilmalei Mikra Kosov, Iafshar L'Omro, Ke'adam Shemenef Al Beno. If not for the Pasuk saying this, we wouldn't be allowed to say this, because it sounds very anthropomorphic, but it's as if Hashem was standing over him to protect him, and he was guarding him. So what's going on over there by the story of the ladder? There's a Rashi on the Gemara, but the Sifsei Chacham, let me just say outside, the Sifsei Chacham explains that Yaakov's image, he says Yaakov's image was on the Kisei HaKavod. And the Malachim, they were going up the ladder, and they would check this image. They saw this image of Yaakov on the Kisei HaKavod, and then it matched Yaakov's face. They went down the ladder, and they saw Yaakov's face, and it created a jealousy between the angels and Yaakov. That's how the Sifsei Chacham, and also Rashi on the Gemara says the same thing. It created a jealousy between the angels and Yaakov needed protection from Hashem himself. If you look in Rashi on the next page, it says, "B'diyokno shalmala parts of Adam sheba'arba chayos bidmus Yaakov." It says that the image of a man on the four chayos, the four chariots, were in the image of Yaakov, which the Sifsei Chacham explains as the Kisei Kavod. Ba'u l'sikune machmas kina. He came to, it was dangerous. Why? Because there was jealousy between the angels and Yaakov. Nitzav alav l'shamro. Hashem was standing above him to protect him from the angels, or protect him at least from this jealousy. Shemenef albino. So he was protecting him. He was like standing over him, like you would protect your son. So what is going on here? What's the idea? Once again, we see that Yaakov is somehow connected to the Kisei HaKavod. And what is that connection? And what does it mean that there's a jealousy? It sounds like the angels are going to attack Yaakov, and Yaakov needs to be protected by Hashem himself. Why is that the case? What is it? We know that Malachim, we know that angels don't have emotions, they're not like human beings in that sense. So what is the concept? How do we explain the jealousy between the Malachim and Yaakov? And why does Yaakov need protection from them? And furthermore, Yaakov's image being on the Kisei HaKavod, I mean, what does that mean? How do we explain that? Okay, so that's the question here. Those are all the questions. So I think we can answer it. I was thinking about this area, and because we worked out this concept last week, I think it also fits into a lot of the questions that we have over here, and there's a similarity between the two stories. So over there, by Vayetze, in the Sulam, there was a jealousy between the angels, and Yaakov's image was on the Kisei HaKavod, and because of that, it created a jealousy. Now, what does that mean? How do we explain that? The Kisei HaKavod, if you were to give one word to explain the Kisei HaKavod, what would it be? It would be, I think, Malchus Hashem. It would be Hashem's kingship. A king sits on a throne, and when you think about a throne, you think about the idea of a melech, of a king in his glory sitting on the throne. So when you think about Hashem also, what comes to mind is his malchus, his kingship over the universe and over the world. Now, how do we explain the image of Yaakov on the Kisei HaKavod? There's always a concept in business of the image of a company. Whenever you see commercials or you see ads in newspapers, there's usually one person. Sometimes it's a sports player. Sometimes it's a pop star. Somebody who's famous is usually the image of the company. And companies try to constantly use that face to advertise their products. And you see that with like football players, for example. A famous football player will be the image of a certain product. And it's the same thing with musicians. So it's the same thing with Yaakov. What does it mean that his image, his face, was on the Kisei HaKavod? It means that Yaakov's image, his face, when people saw Yaakov and they noticed him, they immediately turned to the idea of Malchus Hashem. Yaakov was the representation of Malchus Hashem. His image and his identity was the representation of Malchus Hashem to the world, to the universe. And when people would meet Yaakov, and when they understood all the events that happened to Yaakov, and they spoke to Yaakov, it would immediately give people insight into Malchus Hashem, and they would reflect on Malchus Hashem. So the idea of Yaakov's, I believe, the idea, and how do we explain the Rashi before? The idea is that Yaakov was that representation of Malchus Hashem, of Hashem's kingship, and he was responsible for spreading the ideas of Malchus Hashem to the world, and being a representation of that concept. And the jealousy between the angels is that Yaakov was so much responsible, he was so responsible for reflecting this idea and these concepts, even more so than a malach, even more so than a being that's a malach, a being that's a shliach Hashem. A shliach Hashem, like a malach, is responsible for going for, let's say, nevuah. The shliach Hashem are responsible for enacting God's plan, God's requests, and the malach is responsible for that. And Yaakov, he superseded them, and he went even further and beyond them in terms of reflecting the idea of Malchus Hashem. And that's the idea of the jealousy. It doesn't mean that the Malachim had emotions of jealousy, they wanted to destroy Yaakov. It means that there was an imbalance there. You're jealous of somebody when they have more than you have, typically. And the Medrash is trying to say that the angels understood that Yaakov, he was even more influential and more instrumental in spreading the ideas of Malchus Hashem than even they could. Even a Malach himself could not express an idea about God the way Yaakov could express the idea of Malchus Hashem. And that's the idea of the jealousy, and that's what it means that he was that there was an imbalance between the two, between Yaakov and the angels. Now, how does that idea fit into this whole story of what's going on here between Yaakov and wrestling with the angel, wrestling with the Sarashal Esav? So let's go back to the original question. It says, Vayivaser Yaakov Vivado. He went back for the Pachim Kitanim. He went back for the very small jars. And we said that, although it seems like a bad thing at first, the Gemara says that it's a good thing. So why is the Torah telling us about this, about Yaakov going back for the jars? I think it reflects that, on the one hand, Yaakov was a tzaddik, and he was on a very high level, but he wasn't yet willing to accept the responsibility to be that representation of Malchus Hashem. And a melech, we said before, a melech, how would a melech react to leaving something behind? He wouldn't care about it. If a melech has so much, he has so many things, and he's so powerful, that something small is insignificant to him. And Yaakov, had Yaakov adopted the idea, the concept, that he was really the image of Hashem's Malchus, and that he had to display and demonstrate Malchus, kingship, then he would have left them behind. But the fact that he didn't, and he went back, means that he was unable to embrace this idea. And he was given the Nevuah earlier on in Vayetze. He was given the Nevuah that he really superseded the angels in this message, in this plan, and in his Shlichus. But over here, in this story, the fact that Yaakov is going back for something small means that although he was righteous as an individual, as a Yachid, he was not willing to accept what his role was in terms of being a representation of Hashem's being the king of the universe, the king of the world. And had he accepted that, then he would have been able to just leave it behind. And that's why the story takes us from that point and starts from that point. Now, what do we explain? How do we explain the other two questions? Esav's, what does it mean, Sarah shel Esav? And the idea that the dust went up to the Kisei HaKavod. So the Sarah shel Esav is that the very fear that Yaakov had of Esav, it's not Esav himself. There wasn't a little devil that looked like Esav that was fighting with Yaakov. No. It's that Yaakov understood that his fear of Esav and his inability to accept his superiority over Esav affected his ability to accept his role as the Shliach Hashem in terms of Hashem's kingship. And until he could supersede Esav, and until he could overwhelm and overcome Esav and the image of Esav, the idea of Esav, until that point he would always feel inferior, and he would never be able to accept his true role as the Shliach Hashem in this manner. So the whole story over here, at least at the beginning of the story, is that Yaakov, he's demonstrating his inability to accept his role, the role given to him by Hashem, and he has to battle with the angel, he has to battle with the Sarshal Esav in order to defeat Esav and recognize and take his place, his true place and his true position, you know, in the world. And his true position was even above the Malachim, even beyond the Malach's ability to represent God. That's what Yaakov was. He went even beyond that. And that's the whole that's really the beginning of the story here. And that's what also the dust that goes up to the Kisei HaKavod, it means that that's what they were fighting about. That's what the nature of the fight was about, this idea, this ability of Yaakov to understand what he was, his role. And the only way he could understand his role was to overcome his fear of Esav, and also to understand what that role was, that he had to really think of himself as, you know, being a reflection of Hashem. Okay? That's kind of a deep idea. Does anybody want me to repeat it, or is it clear? Can I get some feedback on the phone line?
Can you repeat?
Yeah.
I was just going to ask if you could just repeat it one more time.
Yes. First I'll repeat it, and then, so let me repeat it one more time. The idea, the main idea of the fight between Yaakov and the angel is that Yaakov was given a message earlier on in Beit El by Hashem, and the message was that you have the ability to supersede an angel in terms of reflecting ideas about God. It's particularly in specific Malchus Hashem, and that's the concept of Yaakov's image being on the Kisei HaKavod. But until this point, before he faces Esav, until this point, he's unable to accept his role. He still feels an inferiority. He has an inferiority complex. He still, because of his fear of Esav, he's still unable to accept his Malchus and his Malchus coming from the fact that he he's the Sar Shel Hashem. You know, he's really like an officer of Hashem. And until this point, he's unable to accept that. And that's the purpose of the fight here with Amalek. He has to be able to overcome his fear of Esav. And he has to be able to recognize and accept his role in terms of demonstrating ideas about Hashem's kingship to the world. And that's the purpose of the fight here. That's why he had to fight the Sar Shel Esav. And that's how we tie in, I think, the story of the idea of the Avak, the Afar, going up to the Kisei HaKavod and the Medrash before. That there's a progression. Before, he was given the Nevuah and told it, but until this point, he's unable to accept it because of his fear of Esav. He had to overcome his fear of Esav. His fear of Esav was impeding his ability to accept his role and understand his role. Okay? Somebody else had a question. Somebody had a question?
I was just thinking about ideas that you about him going back to get the vessels.
Yeah.
No, I don't exactly have like a whole thing formulated, but it just reminds me of when Yitzchak gave them the brachot, the brachot of material wealth was first going to go to Esau, but then Yaakov took it.
Yeah.
So maybe that could be kind of related to his insecurity, maybe. And then I'm not sure. And then another thought I was thinking.
Well, I was trying to tie it in before. I was just trying to tie it in to the idea that on the one hand, in terms of his personal midos, in personal, greatness, it was a good thing. But a melech doesn't go back for small things, and it shows you that he didn't really understand his role in terms of reflecting Malchus. Because if he's supposed to be the image of Malchus Hashem, he shouldn't be going back for little things, for little containers. And that's the very flaw. It wasn't a flaw. See, he wasn't wrong for going back. It just means that he didn't accept what he was supposed to be and his role. And that's why it's telling you that he went back for small things. That's why everybody, when I said, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think Sherry mentioned that it was a bad thing because it should be insignificant. But that's how a king would act. A king wouldn't care about something small. So I would say that was the purpose of the story starting at that point, at that moment. Yeah, you had another point? I'm sorry. I cut you off.
No, I don't know. I was just trying to relate it to like a theme of, I was just thinking, yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Also, like when Bnei Israel left Mitzrayim, they got like a big treasure. So maybe it's like Hashem gives to Israel like the security in the world that you don't, he puts us in a state of material security that we don't need to be concerned about.
Okay, I mean you're more tying it to the future. You know, it's like a nevuah about the future. Okay, it could be. Okay, so let's just go on here. How does this story play out? So you see that Yaakov. Why did this happen now? Beforehand, he was given this nevuah and this idea that he needs to change his perception of himself and he needs to accept a greater role and understand his role. And he doesn't accept it until he needs to fight with Amalek in order to accept it. And it's because of his fear of Esav that he's unable to accept it. But you see, when he actually approaches Esav, he says in Bereishis Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yud, next parak, Vayomer Yaakov, Al na'im namatzasi chen b'necha v'lakachtam bin chasim yadi, ki alken ra'isi fanecha kiros p'nei elokim batir tzini. He says to Esav, accept my mincha from my hand, because seeing your face is like seeing the face of Hashem, and you have accepted me. And Rashi over there says, and it's the next source, ki kedai v'hagun lecha shetekabel minchasi al asher ra'isi fanecha. You should really accept my mincha because I'm seeing your face. V'hein chashuvin li kriyas p'nei amalach. It's important to me, like almost as if I'm seeing the face of a malach. She ra'isi sar shelcha. I saw your officer, your malach. The od al shenis ratzisa limcho serchani. He wants Esav to forgive him for his offense. V'lamat hisgir lo re'iyas hamalach. Why does he mention the fact that he saw a malach to Esav? Kidei she is yare hemenu, so that Esav would be afraid of him. V'yomar ra'a malachim benitzol, and he'll say, oh, he saw malachim and he was saved. Any yachol lo, I cannot prevail over him ma'ata from now. What is this Rashi? How does this Rashi, I think, fits into the pshat that we're saying? Rashi is saying that Yaakov is trying to show Esav that he really needed, Yaakov needed to go through this, and he needed to accept his role before he approached Esav. Had he approached Esav and not understood this about himself and understood his role, and looking at himself as a representative of Malchus, of Malchus Hashem, then he would have approached Esav improperly. But now, after going through the experience of fighting the Malch and defeating the Malch, he hints to Esav that he's seen a Malch, and that's what Rashi says, that I've seen your Sar. So in hinting to Esav that he saw a Malch, Yaakov is really demonstrating an acceptance of his role. And he's trying to inflict fear upon Esav because he understands that he's looking at himself differently. Before, he looked at himself as being inferior. He had a year of Esav. But now he's trying to make Esav afraid. He's trying to demonstrate Esav that he's superior to him in a certain sense, and he's elevating his status in the eyes of Esav. So I think that actually fits into the whole purpose of the story of him wrestling with the Sar Shel Esav, that he's able to, when he actually approaches Esav, he's able to look at himself differently and therefore approach Esav with a greater confidence. The Radak actually, I have the Radak later, but the Radak pretty much says this idea openly. He doesn't explain it as much as we did, but he says that the purpose of the story of, he says, I'm going to read it inside. V'shalach ha'kel zeh ha'malach li'Yaakov. Why did Hashem send this Malach to Yaakov? L'chazek libo shlo yira me'esav. In order to strengthen his heart so that he not be afraid of Esav. Ki lo yuchal lo. Because he couldn't defeat him. L'fichach nevak imo remez lo ki kemoshu nevak imo v'lo yachol la'apilo kein Esav lo yuchal la'haralo. The purpose was that to teach Yaakov that Esav couldn't damage him. Okay, so we're explaining what that means. The story is to strengthen Yaakov before he goes to Esav. But how did it strengthen Yaakov before he goes to Esav? It's strengthening him in that it's giving him a true understanding of what his role is. And it's elevating his status because of his relationship to Hashem and because of his mission from Hashem. His mission as the diokno, the image on Hashem's Kisei HaKavod. And that gave him confidence. That's what allows him to approach Esav in the proper way. Okay? All right. How are we doing on time here? I think we're okay. All right, so let's just go on a little bit more, and then I think we'll wrap up this year. So what happens? He gets his hip gets dislocated. Rashi says in Chaf Vav that his hip gets dislocated, and it's not clear why that happens. And the Radak explains also, which I think is another idea that I think is beautiful, as to why his hip was dislocated, in that before he should have... The Radak says why this was really an onesh for Yaakov, because he already received many nevuas where Hashem says that he's going to protect him, that he's going to be shomer him, especially on a higher level, and Yaakov was unable to accept those nevuas. So the idea of Yaakov's hip being affected is that it's an onesh, that Yaakov should have come to this idea on his own. He didn't need this fight with the Malach in order to understand his role and to elevate his status. But the fact that he needed it was a flaw on the part of Yaakov, and the Radak explains, I'm not going to read the Radak inside, but the Radak is on these very psukim. The Radak explains that because Yaakov was unable to take the nevuahs that were given to him, that he would be shomer, that he would be protected, and that he was on a higher level, even more so than a malach, and he couldn't accept that on his own, and he couldn't defeat Esav on his own, that was a flaw within Yaakov. And therefore, he needed to be punished, and this idea was a constant reminder of that flaw. But also it was necessary, the whole event here was necessary for Yaakov to overcome his fear of Esav and be able to accept his role and understand his role. Where do we see this idea of, and how does this, just asking people on the phone line, how does this fit in with a name change? What's the universal idea of a name change? The universal, Debbie? what is a name change? The universal idea of a name
change.
Yeah, and you have to look at yourself differently. A name change is always to look at yourself differently. By Avram, it says, Av Hamon Goyim, Nisaticha. Whenever a name is changed, Yehoshua, from Hoshea to Yehoshua, whenever a name is changed, it just means that a person has to look at themselves differently. They have to take on a different role. And by Yaakov, his name would now be Yisroel. Why was that necessary? Because Yaakov had to view himself differently than what he did before. It wasn't enough for him to be just your run-of-the-mill tzaddik. He couldn't just be an Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim, but he really had to change it, and the very name that's chosen for him is Yisroel. Kisarisa im Elokim im Anashim Tucha. The very name that's chosen for him is the fact that he has to recognize that he was successful and he prevailed not only over individuals, over men, but he prevailed over the Malachim im Elokim, and that is the idea of Yisroel, that Yaakov had to go through his life and understand his role and see himself differently in order to succeed, in order to be successful as the progenitor of Klal Yisrael. Okay, I'm going to skip just the last point, and I think somebody asked before, what does it mean that sometimes he's called Yaakov and other times he's called Yisrael? If you look in at the last source in the Torah Tmima, and it's Brachos Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. It says, Lo yikare Tanya, Lo yikare Shemcha od Yaakov, Ki im Yisrael yeshemecha, Lo she yaakir Shem Yaakov mimakomo, Ela she Yisrael ikar v'Yaakov tafelo. It's not that Yaakov was replaced by Yisrael, but Yisrael would be the essential name, and Yaakov would be tafel, would be secondary. So this is explaining the question I think Naomi asked before, as to what is the significance of changing his name if you're not really changing his name. See, Yaakov was not, he was a tzaddik on his own right, and he had, as an individual, as a yachid, before he assumed the role of Yisrael, he was a tzaddik. But once he assumed the role of Yisrael, now he had to look at himself differently, and he had to approach the world differently, and understand what his, what his meaning was. But the name Yaakov is not forgotten because there are ideas in the name of Yaakov. There are ideas about his personal, his personal greatness and his personal spirituality that are expressed in the name Yaakov that shouldn't be forgotten. So the name Yisrael, on the one hand, was necessary for Yaakov to develop Yaakov's confidence so that he understands what he is and who he is in order to develop Klal Yisrael properly. But it doesn't replace Yaakov. It doesn't replace Yaakov because Yaakov himself had a certain greatness before he undertook this role. He had a certain greatness that shouldn't be forgotten. So therefore, it's really tough El to Yisrael. It's not forgotten, it's not lost, but it's secondary to the name Yisrael. Okay, so that's really the share, the main focus of the share. Let me just summarize, because I know there's a lot of ideas. The share was on the struggle between Yaakov and the wrestling match between Yaakov and the Sarshal Esav, which Rashi mentions later on as a Malach of Esav. And we try to give a certain understanding and a depth to the meaning behind the struggle, whether it really happened or it was a nevuah, but what's the purpose of it? The Radak says the purpose was to strengthen Yaakov so that he would not be afraid of Esau. But how did it do that? We see before, we see that Yaakov, he's going back for the Pachim Ketanim, he's going back for small jars, and we see that he's fighting with the Sarashal Esav, and the dust goes up to the Kisei HaKavod. And there's a reference to Yaakov's image being on the Kisei HaKavod earlier on in Vayetze, and it created a jealousy between him and the Malachim, and now he's actually fighting with the Malach. Now, what does this all mean? It means that Yaakov was the image of Hashem's Malchius, that he had a mission. His mission was to go out into the world, and that people should see him and see Malchius Hashem, and he himself had to accept that, and he had to assume that role, and he had to act in line with that role. And until this event, where he struggles with the Malach, and he's able to overcome his fear of Esav, until that happens, he's unable to assume that role. But after this event, he is able to assume it. And you see that when he approaches Esav, he has a different approach to Esav. He's more confident. And Rashi explains that he even tries to make Esav afraid by telling him, oh, I've seen an angel, and I'm still alive. There's an idea of an understanding on Yaakov's part of who he was, and that's why he needed to change his name. His name was changed at this point to reflect the idea that he was now assuming a new role, and that he had to look at himself differently than he did before, but that doesn't erase his greatness as Yaakov. The ideas of Yaakov and the greatness of Yaakov will always be there, and it will be there for us to learn from. But on the other hand, Yisrael becomes dominant. It becomes who Yaakov is, and Yaakov has to assume that role in order to successfully build up the nation and Klal Yisrael. Okay, does anybody have any questions on the shir? Any questions? I think that also might explain panim al panim. It means that Yaakov understood. He had a great, the idea of going beyond the angels is the idea of panim al panim. Usually man, in communicating with God, he communicates through an indirect manner, through a malach. But over here, Yaakov was was superseding, he was going above the angels in terms of his ability to impact the world, in terms of his ability to reflect God. And that's the idea of panem al panem, that Yaakov understood that idea. He understood that he's no longer, you know, I guess he was always mortal, but his ability to give over and his ability to influence others in Yedias Hashem was now beyond the angels. It was beyond them. And that's panem al panem, that he's going beyond even the angels in that sense. Okay? Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Ari.
Okay. Everybody have a good Shabbos. Thanks for calling in. Everybody have a good Shabbos.
Thank you.
Next week. Bye.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye.